Today's Veterans Radio program is dedicated to the members of the WARWAC Classes 6829 and 68517, who returned home from Vietnam 44 years ago this week. Welcome home, guys.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome home to all of you, and welcome to Veterans Radio this, well, I wouldn't say beautiful Saturday morning here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, but the snow is flying and It's winter, and as I said at the beginning of the program, I arrived home from Vietnam 44 years ago this last Wednesday, and I was thinking about that, and I was talking to my partner Bob, who is off today, hopefully enjoying himself, and we wanted to talk a little bit about the welcome home that many of us received when we did get back here to the United States. And if you remember back in World War II, these guys came home in their troop ships, and they all came home together, and it seems like the troops that are coming home today come home together, and then they kind of have this debriefing and so forth. And when I came home from Vietnam, we all, you know, got onto these commercial airplanes in Saigon, and I ended up flying to San Francisco, so you'll recognize some of the bump music that we may use today. And once I got to San Francisco, I got on a plane to fly to New Jersey, and I think I was the only person on the whole airplane. And it gave me a lot of time to think about what was going on and the insight and so forth. And when I arrived in Newark, the weather was snowy, just as it is here today. And it just brought back, you know, it's always amazing when you think about the flashbacks that you have and what causes them. But my wife had hung a big sign on the side of her family's house there in New Jersey, and, you know, it said, "Welcome home, Dale." And I was just thinking about that this morning as I was driving into the studio, and it was such a great feeling of welcomeness to be, you know, welcomed back into the family and back into the home, and there were a number of friends there and so forth. So this is to all of those veterans who have come home from whatever wars or conflicts they were involved in. I just want to offer you a very, very sincere welcome home. It's really great to be home sometimes. You know, there's a lot of things going on here, and I want to talk about, you know, we're coming up to Christmas, and I want to remind everybody that the Veterans Radio Bookstore is now open. And this is an opportunity for you to help out a number of different people, and including yourself, by going in and purchasing some of the great books that we've talked about over the last year or so here on Veterans Radio. It's veteransradiobookstore.com. And we have this nice arrangement going with Amazon right now. And if you click on the cover of the book, or you click on the Amazon logo that's on the bookstore page, it takes you into Amazon, and you can purchase whatever you want. You can purchase books. You can purchase clothing. You can purchase music, a car. I don't know what else you can buy on Amazon, but whatever it is you buy, we get a percentage of it. So that's what's so cool about this arrangement, is that you can satisfy whatever needs you have to buy these Christmas gifts. You can help yourself. You can help the authors of these books, because we wouldn't have a program without these authors, and they come up with these great stories that we try to bring you every week. And, of course, then you can help Veterans Radio. It does cost us a couple of dollars every week to put the program on, and we want to make sure that we can stay on the air for a long time. So we need your help, and here's an opportunity for you to help out not only our authors but Veterans Radio as well. So go to veteransradiobookstore.com and help yourself. It's a veritable smorgasbord of merchandise, right? So we want to talk about that. We also want to make sure that all of you, there are many organizations out there, and the list is just too long for me to mention this week, that are looking for help in sending packages overseas to the military that are still stationed around the world. You know, even though the wars are winding down, we still have many, many of our troops, men and women, are stationed all over the world, and they're going to be away at Christmas. And I can tell you from personal experience, being away from home on Christmas, it was one of the hardest things that we had to do. Because you feel like you should be festive, but you can't be festive because there's a war going on around you. I actually had one of my very first flights was on Christmas Day, and I flew over the top of the Bob Hope Christmas show in Long Binh, Vietnam, and because I was a new guy in country, I didn't get to go. Not that I hold a grudge, but It was fascinating to that, and there are all types, as I said, organizations around the country right now that are collecting money, collecting merchandise to be sent over to these people, and I think that their deadline for shipping is coming up very soon now, and I know that a local college that I work at has been collecting funds to take money and gifts up to the local VA hospital. So just check around your local paper or listen to some of your local radio stations, and I'm sure that there are people out there that are trying to help out their veterans, and this is a great opportunity for all of us to participate in that. And I just want to, again, just welcome all of our veterans home, all you men and women who have put on the uniform to serve this great country. It's an honor to know you, and it's a great honor to talk about you every week here on Veterans Radio. This program that we're going to be doing today is a little bit unusual for us, but it just kind of came into focus a couple of weeks ago. And it's going to be talking about the coordination that is going on right now between civilian medical personnel and military medical personnel and how the techniques that are being developed by both are starting to help each other out. We're going to take a break in just a minute, but I just want to give you a little preview of what we're going to be talking about today. The first thing is we're going to be talking with Dr. William Shields, who is from Nationwide Children's Hospital down in Columbus, Ohio. And he's going to be talking about the technique that they use on civilians to remove foreign objects from your body. Now, that sounds kind of weird, doesn't it? But the foreign objects that, you know, little kids might put into their bodies are different than the foreign objects that might end up inside some of the military people overseas. And, you know, through shrapnel, these IEDs and stuff, not only do they blow, pieces of ball bearings and metal and so forth, but fabric and all kinds of things get embedded in your system, in your skin, and kind of just are absorbed by it, and they never get out. And traditional, from what I understand, and I'm sure he will correct me if I'm wrong, but traditionally they can't find all of these foreign objects. So he has come up with a plan using ultrasound and some other techniques that are minimally invasive to get these materials out of these soldiers, and not only does it help them physically, but it helps them mentally. I don't know about any of you who have had mental or physical problems that affect you mentally, and a lot of these wounds that are invisible affect the psyche of these veterans. So we're going to talk with Dr. Shields right after the first break. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to Dr. Teresa Pape, who works with the Edward Hines VA Hospital in Chicago. And she's also with Northwestern University. And she's going to be talking about a series of videos that she has put together on traumatic brain injury, which we know is the number one injury in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's fascinating stuff, and I want you all to pay attention. And I want you to call in if you have questions, because maybe you know somebody that's suffering from either one of these problems. And the number here is 877-573-7825. It's 877-573-7825. And we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Dr. William Shields from Nationwide Children's Hospital.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
It's a 19-hour flight from Saigon to Seattle. It's a long, long night, but I'm finally coming home. By the morning light, I'll be back in Texas. I'll watch the sunrise cross the prairies. Warm these weary bones.
When I was Michael J. Martin, skipping around a little bit, but that's what it was like. 24 hours, you're in one place, it's really hot. In his case, he goes to Texas, but 24 hours later, you're at home in the arms of your family. It's amazing. Just an amazing time period in all of our lives. Well, right now, I want to remind everybody that you can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and also on Twitter. Maria is up and at it. She is in Seattle, Washington today, but she just texted me that she is up and will be doing her duties, which is always great. And I greatly appreciate what Maria does for us here at Veterans Radio. And also that you can now listen to our programs as iPods. You can download them as podcasts on the Ave Maria Radio Network. If you go into their website, avemaria.org, you can go to their podcast, and you'll find Veterans Radio listed there. And you can listen to the programs usually within about an hour after we're finished here on the air. And, of course, we archive all of our programs on the veteransradio.net website. Okay, enough of the commercial stuff. Right now, I want to welcome our first guest to the program, and it's going to take me a little while to introduce Dr. William Shields, Chief of Nationwide Children's Hospital Department of Radiology and President of the Children's Radiological Institute. He is a graduate faculty member in biomedical engineering at The Ohio State University College of Medicine, as well as an adjunct professor at the Department of Radiology at the University of Toledo Medical Center and The Ohio University College of Osteopathic Medicine. He is also a veteran, which I learned this morning, which is great, and he's a lieutenant colonel right now. And so, Dr. Shields, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, and this program that you've got going at Nationwide Children's Hospital is just fascinating to me, but I want to get a little bit more of your background out first. So can you tell me about your experience? You mentioned that you were in the military, so let's start with that.
Well, I'm an Army doctor and was trained in radiology in Honolulu at Tripler Army Medical Center, and then went on to a civilian pediatric radiology fellowship in Cincinnati, Ohio, and then began my formal time as a faculty service member at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, and was at Walter Reed for 5 years, and then 4 years at the Pentagon, working at the Surgeon General's office, and served as the Surgeon General's radiology consultant. And the radiology consultant is the manager for all radiology services. And at that time, we were in the middle of Desert Storm. So my job was to manage all the resources that supported the peacetime care at Walter Reed in CONUS, and then to support all the care that we were providing at Desert Storm and deploy the doctors, deploy the technologists, deploy the equipment. And in 1996, then transferred to Nationwide Children's Hospital to help them build a program of excellence, and have been there ever since.
Well, it certainly does give you a lot of credibility for what we're talking about today, then.
Well, I hope so. And having been in a position to care for the first soldiers, Marines, airmen, and sailors that came over from Desert Storm, granted there were not many injuries, but the few injuries that were, one of the ones that stuck out in my mind was a young troop who was wounded by a Scud missile fragment, and had if you remember the Scud missiles, they were not all metallic, and a big part of the Scud missile casing is rubber and fiberglass. Well, rubber and fiberglass do not show up well on an X-ray, but they light up very brilliantly under ultrasound. And since sound can see anything that's solid, very much the whole rationale for using sonar with a submarine, anything that's solid underwater, you can see it and steer clear of it. But in this case, we see it and detect it, and then we can guide an instrument to go in and very minimally invasively remove things like the Scud missile fragments, or in the case of IEDs, porcelain fragments, concrete fragments, fragments of plastic, Claymore mine fragments that are plastic and would not show up on an X-ray, pieces of clothing, pieces of plant material that are embedded with IED blasts, etc. So very, very interesting opportunity to have the honor to care for the the wounded soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines.
It just sounds so unbelievable to me, and I think especially to our civilian audience. I want to encourage anybody out there who has any questions about that to give us a call here at 877-573-7825. We're talking with Dr. William Shields of Nationwide Children's Hospital, who's put together a program with the military on how to use ultrasound to remove these fragments from our military personnel who have been wounded. And the list of materials that can be blown into the body that you just mentioned is I don't know, it's inspiring. Not inspiring is not the word, it's just outrageous how many things can get in there, and then what, you know, the damage that it can do if you cannot find them.
Well, and the other point, Dale, that is not to be understated is the chronic pain. Mm-hmm. And the psychological impact of having a constant reminder of a wound. And to have that every time you move a muscle, every time you move a facial muscle, to realize there's something inside that is irritating you, and whether it's causing recurrent infections or whether it's just a source of chronic pain, a lot of our veterans are hesitant to have doctors touch them for a number of reasons, but the beauty of this technique is it is minimally invasive. It should be minimally painful. As soon as the fragment is out, the pain should be relieved. Mm-hmm. And it can be done without anesthesia in most cases, and it certainly is done without any sort of hospitalization. And the psychological impact of having a daily chronic reminder of your injury and the trauma of war is something that we would love to be able to get these wounded warriors out of harm's way psychologically and let them move on to the healing that's required to maintain a healthy life in the future.
Well, I can tell you, I know a number of veteran friends of mine who have shrapnel that is unfortunately probably still in them from the Vietnam era, and they say every once in a while a piece will work its way out, you know, through their arm or leg or wherever they got hit with this stuff. And I can only imagine the pain that must be associated with that. I've had a kidney stone. I don't know if that's anything like it, but it certainly, I can only somewhat relate to that pain that must be, you know, that must cause when these things move.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Whether it's just in a muscle or whether it's up against a nerve, the unfortunate part is the body is a great healer, and some of those very sharp metallic shrapnel fragments may indeed work themselves out. The ones that aren't so sharp, the body is going to lock in on, and it's going to form an encasement of scar tissue, and that will also have nerve endings in there. So if they don't work themselves out, they may just be a continual source of pain and irritation that they're absolutely unnecessarily maintained within the body. Now that we have an option to remove them, the program that we do have with the grant that we received from the Department of Defense and is now being administered by the United States Army Materials and Research Command at Fort Detrick, we have the opportunity to train the military physicians and radiologists and surgeons in these minimally invasive techniques to get access to this treatment to every veteran and active duty service member that we can.
It sounds like a wonderful program, and in reading your bio and the information that's available there is that you are currently, how long has this program been going on?
Well, we are in our second year of formal training, and it took some time, as you would imagine, with the bureaucracy of
yes.
the military to get all the signatures that were required, but we have finished the first year of training, and we're training at the four largest military medical centers. And again, back to my roots at Triple Army Medical Center. We'll be there in 3 weeks for the second run of training there. But mm-hmm. at Triple Army Medical Center in the Pacific Ocean. And then we have Walter Reed Military Medical Center, which is now the merger of Walter Reed and Bethesda Naval into one center in the D.C. area. So Walter Reed Military Medical Center. Then we're going to be at Brook, or now the San Antonio Regional Military Medical Center, which mm-hmm. is the combined Brook Army Medical Center and Wilford Hall Air Force Medical Center. So now we have San Antonio. And then Tacoma, we have Madigan Army Medical Center, which is, again, going to be a tri-service facility. So Madigan, Walter Reed, Tripler, and Brook are the locations for our training, and we have been doing this for one full year, and actually now we're into the second year. We've already been to Brooke for the second time, and we head to the Pearl Harbor region for the second run at Tripler to train the next wave of doctors and then set them to move forward to take care of the veterans in their regions.
Are they currently using these procedures now?
They are. Actually, that's the whole point of the grant was the Department of Defense realized that we have developed this center of excellence that originally came out of my experience in the military. I actually developed the procedure in the Army, and then when I went into civilian medicine, we further refined it, and it exploded, and we've removed over 900 of these foreign bodies from both accidental and self-inflicted injuries. And so the military physicians were not routinely using this. Now, I've personally trained two doctors in the Army, and one doctor who is on active duty in Honolulu, Tripler, Colonel Veronica Rooks, was actually deployed to Iraq. And after we trained her, she successfully removed a piece of IED fragment. It was a piece of concrete fragment from the soldier's arm. And the doctors at the combat support station were not able to get it out, and so Dr. Rooks went in and used the techniques we taught her and removed it in a combat aid station, and it was an awesome gratification moment where you realize you train one doctor and then you set her forth into a war zone, and she treats someone successfully and gets them back to duty right in the battlefield. So
I think that's just amazing that you could do that, you know, in a combat zone, and how the medical facilities and medical services have improved over the years to what you can do. I was interested when I was reading the press release that I received about your program is how you train these doctors and some of the techniques and the what are you using, turkey breasts, to show them how to get these pieces out. Could you explain that to our audience?
Well, Dale, I think the best explanation really comes from my training with the 101st Airborne Division when I trained with the Screaming Eagles and did air assault training. You know, when we train in air assault or airborne maneuvers, we don't do those maneuvers for the first time in the middle of Baghdad,
right,
in a war situation. You train in military training in a simulated environment, and you learn how to deploy, how to insert, how to engage the enemy in a simulated environment, and you learn how to do it right, but you also learn a very important thing, and that is what is going to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And air assault maneuvers, when you rappel out of a Black Hawk, you can kill yourself or you can kill the soldier below you if you do it wrong. And so we perfect these skills in a simulated environment. A pilot, you mentioned you were flying over Vietnam. Well, a pilot doesn't learn how to crash land a plane with people on board.
You learn how to crash land a plane
on a simulator. So
right,
the whole concept of the turkey breast, since it's real tissue and real muscle and bones and skin, we don't want the doctors to practice and learn how to, A, succeed, but more importantly, what the causes of failure in a procedure are on our wounded veterans.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want them to become the guinea pigs for training.
Right.
So we take turkey breasts, which is a large piece of encased tissue, and we embed these shrapnel fragments in the turkey breast meat and deep into the muscle. And then the military doctors, we teach them all the techniques for finding them, identifying them, figuring out what they are by looking at them with the ultrasound technology, and then how to go in first through the skin and then do the different techniques to spread the pieces of muscle away and relieve these foreign bodies and remove them. So it's real tissue, and so as we say to people, we'd rather have the doctors train on a turkey breast than on your breast.
Absolutely. Wow, so that's amazing. And this whole story is fascinating to me about the coordination that is going on currently between the civilian world and the medical world, or the military world, and how many of you, you're a great example of this, who were in the military and have taken that training and brought it over to civilian world, and now you're going back to help them out.
Absolutely, and The other exciting thing being a regional center of excellence at Nationwide Children's Hospital is to take care of the TRICARE beneficiaries, the children, the spouses, and even actually active duty troops. I'm currently taking care of an active duty Air Force airman with a problem in his eye. And so it's a huge opportunity to continue my love for the military and to my love as a military physician to be still in the care of the military members, dependents, and active duty troops and veterans, for that matter.
You mentioned earlier when we were talking that this program is open to civilians as well. And tell us a little bit more about the Nationwide Children's Hospital, where you are, and how people may get in touch with you if they need help.
Well, Nationwide Children's Hospital is fascinating. I can't tell you how grateful I am for the opportunity to work in a place like this. It is a freestanding children's hospital. I'm a faculty member at Ohio State, close to the hospital, but Nationwide Children's is unique because it's one of the very few children's hospitals that has doctors who will also engage in the care of adults, to include military active duty members and veterans, if they have a unique disease that's either a pediatric disease or, in the case of these foreign bodies, if there is a unique skill set and a unique care plan that we have at Nationwide Children's Hospitals that the adults in the civilian or military community need access to, we open the doors, we take excellent care of them, and it's a tremendous, again, tremendous opportunity to maintain my love for military members and the care that we are able to provide. As far as the civilians, I train civilians in these foreign body removal techniques. Just last week, I removed from Chicago from a huge medical meeting, and we had three of these simulator training courses for these foreign body removal techniques in Chicago last week. And we trained about 300 doctors from literally around the world. We had training representing about 30 countries in Chicago. So we're busy doing the training to get these techniques out to make this care available for people literally all around the world. But more importantly, for our veterans within the 50 United States, to provide these people who have given their hearts and their bodies and their souls and their minds to the care of our country and the defense of our country.
Well, I'm so grateful that we had the opportunity to talk to you today, Dr. Shields, about your program at Nationwide Children's Hospital and about what's going on and how we can remove these foreign objects, not only for the military, but also for civilians. And it sounds as though this whole program is going nationwide. And at some point, I'm going to be able to walk into my local medical center and say, hey, can you get this thing out of here? And they're going to say, sure, just lie down here. We'll take care of it for you.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. And I encourage people to check out Nationwide Children's Hospital. And I'm sure they must have a website. Could you give that to our audience?
Absolutely. The website is nationwidechildrens.org, and if there's any need to reach me, the spelling of my name is a little different. There's no D in the name,
right.
So it's William.Shields, that's S-H-I-E-L-S, at nationwidechildrens.org, and in that website, Nationwide Children's is one word.
Okay.
So William.Shields at nationwidechildrens.org, and my secretary, Linda, is happy to receive any calls, 614-722-2363. And if I left the veterans with one message, is very simply, you do not need to suffer with embedded foreign bodies, because they can be removed, and we can give you the freedom to get rid of these vexing, torturesome items in your body and let you sleep at night comfortably and let all those wounds from war heal and move forward to be aggressive contributors to our great country.
I couldn't have said it better. Thank you very, very much, Dr. William Shields, for being on Veterans Radio, and look forward to talking to you again. Keep us informed of what you're up to.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. I also want to thank that story came to us by one of our contributors, Suzette Dexter, who was out there finding all these amazing stories for us here on Veterans Radio. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Teresa Pape, and we're going to be talking about traumatic brain injury and what is going on with the treatment of that and the program that she has put together at the William Hines VA Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Technician 5th grade Lewis Hall ignored orders to withdraw from his position and continued firing a machine gun until he was killed. Details after this.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
They came from every corner of the country, from small towns and big cities. But they all shared one thing in common. They belonged to a family called Marines. A tough and determined few, dedicated to protecting everything we hold sacred. And still, they come. Celebrate the history of those proud few who have earned the title Marine.
As leader of a machine gun squad charged with the protection of other battalion units, Hall's group was attacked by a superior number of Japanese. His gunner was killed, his assistant gunner was wounded, and an adjoining gun crew put out of action. Ordered to withdraw from his hazardous position, he refused to retire, but rushed forward to the idle gun. Another soldier joined him and held the machine gun up by the tripod to increase its field of action. Hall opened fire and inflicted heavy casualties upon the enemy. While so engaged, both soldiers were killed, but their sturdy defense was a decisive factor in the following success of the attacking battalion. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
You're listening to Veterans Radio live from our flagship station, WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, Michigan, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, Florida, or listen online at AveMaria.net.
And I was going to San Francisco 44 years ago this week. So excuse me while I go down memory lane during this program today. I appreciate the opportunity to share some of this music with our fellow veterans out here from that era. And, you know, it gives me an opportunity to ask our Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, you know, if there are particular songs that you would like to hear or that we can play that can bring back good memories for you, let us know. We're old, so sometimes we don't hear that music and we don't have the opportunity to play it like we want to. So send us your suggestions and your requests, and we'll try to play them for you. This song was really important to many of us who came home during the 1960s, only because we came through San Francisco. What a city that was, I can tell you. That's another story I forgot. All right. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and you can get in on the conversation today by giving us a call at 877-573-7825. Joining me right now on the Veterans Radio line from Chicago, or probably up near Evanston, is our next guest, and this is Dr. Teresa Pape, who works with the Edward Hines VA Hospital there. She also is, let me find your whole thing here for you, Dr. Pape, a clinical neuroscientist at the Edward Hines Jr. VA Hospital and research associate professor at Northwestern University. And you have put together a program on traumatic brain injury, or TBIs, which we're going to be talking about today. And so I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. Good morning.
So how are things in Chicago? You got a little white stuff there, too?
Right. It's just as white as probably Ann Arbor is. But it's pretty snow this morning.
Yes, as long as we're inside, it's really nice.
Right.
Well, I want to welcome you to the program. And this was a story that I received an email from L.G. Taylor. Now, I haven't had a chance to talk to L.G., and I know that she's not available today. But can you tell me how this whole program came together where you and she were working on these videos?
Sure. Well, actually, she reached out to me. She had done her homework. She had done some research about traumatic brain injury and came across my work and emailed me and asked me if I would be willing to talk with her about my work. And so we spoke, and she asked, then followed up and asked if I would be willing to do a series of videos about what I do for the lay public. And I agreed. It's an important piece of what I do, getting out there. It's important that us scientists get out there and talk about our research and what we're doing on behalf of society, and in this case, on behalf of our veterans and warriors. And we try to explain what we're doing so that people understand.
Well, let's kind of rehash a little bit for our audience, you know, what traumatic brain injury is, first of all, and then we can go into what you've been doing to work on that.
Sure. So traumatic brain injury, or TBI, is simply a trauma to the head, just as it sounds. It's a trauma to the head that can be brought on by an external force. So, for example, a car accident. People don't think of that as an external force because they don't necessarily hit their head, but the brain is bouncing inside the skull, and the skull is a very bony, solid substance, and the brain is soft, and so it's going to bounce inside that back and forth, and you'll get bruises and lesions to the brain, just like you would a knee if you were to hit your knee or twist your knee. That will happen to the brain. And, you know, the brain injuries, the traumatic brain injuries, can be of different severities. They can be anything from what's called mild to severe, where a mild traumatic brain injury often is thought of as ringing your bell or a concussion,
mm-hmm.
whereas a severe traumatic brain injury will induce coma and in an unconscious state. And so I'll study traumatic brain injury of all severities. I have a particular passion for severe traumatic brain injury. I think the most vulnerable of the vulnerable. I have a particular passion to try to help them.
Well, how did you develop that passion?
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of people ask me that. I think it's just it's an incredibly complex problem scientifically, and it's a complex problem for society. I think it was really the ethical and the moral dilemma. We have the capacity to save their lives and to prolong their lives for years to come, but we have no capacity to give them any function. So mm-hmm. we can save a life, but then they'll be in a vegetative state for 10, 20 years before they ultimately pass away. But we have no capacity to give them a quality life once we've saved it. And I just, honestly, it was the moral dilemma, and I felt that scientifically I could figure it out.
Well, it sounds like you've been doing a pretty good job. You talk about, in the press release that I got, it says, that, quoting you, severe traumatic and non-traumatic brain injuries are catastrophic events categorized by disordered consciousness. And while some people recover full consciousness swiftly, others will experience an extended period of disordered consciousness evolving into complex cognitive and physical impairments and possibly a chronic condition. And that certainly defined exactly what is going on, because you have mentioned that this also is one of the main causes of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well,
am I jumping too fast to that?
I think that they co-occur. So in particular, with the mild traumatic brain injury, it's very common that mild TBI and PTSD will co-occur. And that happens in the civilian population as well.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine going through this traumatic event, you know, something like being hit by a car, a pedestrian being hit by a car, or it's a very traumatic event. And in the war zone, you know, you're seeing your buddies, you know, losing limbs. So these are very traumatic events. And so often the brain injury will co-occur with a mental health condition such as PTSD. Now, with the severe TBI, We just don't know. The first goal has to be to wake them up, to give them consciousness, and then function. And then we honestly just don't know if we're going to be dealing with PTSD or anxiety or depression. Presumably they won't remember as much mm-hmm. as the person with mild TBI. So the answer to that question is an unknown at this point with severe. But with mild, we know that we have a lot of co-occurring complex conditions that we're dealing with.
You talk about the idea of the brain being soft and the skull being hard, and when these things are rattled together, that you know the brain is damaged and bruised, and as you point out, sometimes it takes a long time for these bruises to heal. At least that's kind of my understanding of it.
Sure. So there's some natural repair mechanisms that we have in our brain, but sometimes, you know, those just aren't enough. In the mild cases, most people will recover from one mild head injury. Most people will recover within, you know, a few weeks or 3 months. They'll go back to work. They'll go back to the front line. But some people will just have persisting problems. And and so sometimes those natural repair mechanisms just aren't enough. And with the severe TBI, you know, it's clearly not enough. So, you know, in the past 5 years or so, we've started to understand how we can influence brain function in relationship to these natural repair mechanisms. And sometimes we're just taking advantage of those natural repair mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we're actually trying to mitigate the barriers to those mechanisms. So sometimes our brain will respond in such a way that it's introducing barriers to repair and recovery and healing, and we just got to get rid of those barriers. But then sometimes we need to figure out how to facilitate those natural repair mechanisms or go around them if they're not working and create new ones.
How do you go around them?
That's a good question. So we're figuring that one out right now. So for example, one study that I just got funded actually by Army, So it's going to look at transcranial magnetic stimulation. And what I'm going to try to come to understand is, what is it about how the networks in the brain connect structurally as well as functionally? How does our brain communicate? How does one region communicate with another? And how is my treatment, the TMS or transcranial magnetic stimulation, altering that communication? So there's a natural way our brain has learned to communicate. One region is communicating with another, and just as a child, we developed and our brain has developed a way to communicate. And in essence, I'm probably going to be changing that, but I'll find out exactly how I'm changing that communication within the brain when I go to analyze all my data 3 years from now.
It's amazing, and it's great that you're able to get the funding to do this research, because, you know, these types of injuries obviously have been happening, you know, since the beginning of time. And the idea is that you especially are starting to be able to figure out how to treat these people so that they can come back to becoming, you know, to be functional again, is just, has to be gratifying to you.
Yeah, it is, very much so. I haven't published on this young man, but we just finished a pilot study with a young man who'd been in a vegetative state for 9 years. And we gave him the treatment, the TMS treatment, mm-hmm. and it's really neat. He's answering yes-no questions now, and before he wasn't responding at all. And so most of us walk into his room, and we kind of leave very teary-eyed, and we realize what we've done. And so us scientists, don't get those immediate positive feedback very often in mm-hmm. our careers. And it's every once in a while. I think 2 times in my career so far I've had that. And working with that young man who had been in the vegetative state for 9 years was definitely one of them.
Well, that has got to be gratifying. Well, I can understand the tears coming on that one.
Yeah.
You know, because of the work that you're doing and because of the support that you have from, you know, I guess from the military and from, you know, from civilian donors or people that are writing these grants. Are most of your grants coming from the military, or are they coming from
no.
like
so
McCormick
had,
and so on?
So most of my grants are federal grants. So
mm-hmm.
a scientist, so I have another grant from the National Institutes of Health as well. And then I've had grants from the actual VA, Office of Research and Development also.
Mm-hmm.
So most of my grants are federal grants. I do have some support from a local charity. It's called the Nick Cott Charity for Traumatic Brain Injury. It's a small charity that provides me with some important discretionary funding.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, most of my grants, my funding is provided through competitive research mechanisms. And of course, there's always a need for philanthropic contributions. I just think that most of society isn't aware of the very severe head injuries. You know, those are the people we hear about on the news. Oh, they're alive, and we hope they wake up. And then it seems as though once the acute phase passes, that the news media loses track and they don't follow them anymore. And then society's just not really aware. The numbers aren't as big. You know,
right.
The mild TBI has a huge number of people incurring mild TBI, but the severe is a smaller number. But the injuries to the patient's just devastating, and the family is just traumatized. And everything in their life has changed.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm trying to remember. I know we had a gentleman in here a couple of years ago from the Traumatic Brain Institute of Michigan. I can't remember the exact name. I'm blanking on it right now. But they had a veteran from Iraq who had, you know, had a fairly severe TBI injury, had some paralysis as a result and so on. And we saw the before-after pictures, and then he comes walking in and sits down and talks to us. I mean, not 100%, but it was so inspiring, not only for the work that you are doing, but also obviously the work that the patient has to do to bring themselves back. There's that coordination that has to go on there.
Right.
I'm just so grateful that there are grants out there for you to continue to do these types of research. And this is going to be a paid political announcement, but I'm going to say we need to make sure that these grants keep going. So,
thank you. Yes, I agree.
how else do we solve these problems without, you know, people like you and the other researchers and so forth around the country that can spend a little bit of time to go into the depths of whatever the problem happens to be. And I can't imagine, you know, if you had no funding, what would you do? You know,
I wouldn't be able to do the research.
Yeah, how can you do this?
And what I do is, with the severe TBI, is particularly costly.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of it as a direct research expense, it's more costly relative to a different study. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, these folks are very sick. And so I work really closely with a lot of physicians who are overseeing the medical safety of the patients and the medical care for the veterans and civilians who are in my studies. And so that means they're in an acute bed. And that's, you were talking about the coordination between mm-hmm. the civilian sector and the military. And so this is really reflective of a very strong partnership between the Heinz VA and Northwestern's Medical School. I've been working with both institutions for some time now. And it's Northwestern's Medical School, for example, has a unique situation where they have a six beds in an inpatient unit called a clinical research unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with Dr. Josh Rosenau there at Northwestern, and he will admit the patients to his service and oversee their medical care while I'm providing my experimental treatments. And then the Heinz VA has mimicked that, and so we will admit the veterans to Heinz VA and into the acute bed there. So mm-hmm. as you can imagine, these acute beds, you know, people need them, and I've got the support that I need from these two institutions to admit our veterans and warriors to these beds so that I can provide my treatments, my experimental treatments, in a medically safe environment.
Oh, that's an incredible story. We're going to take a break right now. We're talking with Dr. Teresa Pape, who works at the Edward Hines VA Hospital in Chicago and also at Northwestern, and how she's coordinating all these treatments and so forth for people who are suffering from traumatic brain injury. And if you have a question, real quick, you can get in at 877-573-7825. We'll be right back after this short message.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Why are you so distant?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
You gonna get a job now or what?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel.
Okay, welcome back to Veterans Radio. It wasn't a little cafe. It was a diner on Highway 22 in New Jersey. Anyway, welcome home, everybody. It's great to be here, I can tell you that. We're talking with Dr. Teresa Pape from the Edward Hines VA Hospital about traumatic brain injury, and we've got about 5 minutes to go, Dr. Pape. So let's talk about this series of programs that you put together. I saw the first one, and just kind of go through and tell us what they are and where people can see them.
Sure. So LG started this YouTube station called NeuroWrapped, so it's R-A-P-T, .com, and it's sort of like, I think her thought behind that was rapping with the neuroscientist, which I think most people would find humorous. But nonetheless, so she started that YouTube channel, and she developed it, and is reaching out to us neuroscientists to try to help us explain what we do in layman's terms. And so I gave her a lot of material back in, about a year ago, and she thought that it logically fell into four segments. And one was just the one that you saw, just talking about what is traumatic brain injury, how often does it happen, and that kind of thing. And so then the next segment is going to be talking more about, well, what are some common brain lesions, what's actually happening to the brain with severe traumatic brain injury relative to mild, for example. So I will often describe lesions relative to severity. And so in the next segment, I believe, is being released Monday, actually, the 16th. Mm-hmm. And I had emailed you those dates, Dale. So
I got them right here.
Oh, good, because I don't have them right in front of me.
December 16th, on Monday, we're going to be, it's common brain lesions associated with severe TBI. And then on December 30th, you've got neural repair after severe. What's neural repair?
Right. So that's how the brain, what we were talking about earlier was, how does the brain heal itself, right? And how does naturally, okay? And so what are we dealing with to help the brain heal naturally, and then how can we introduce new healing?
Okay. And then your final one is the neural repair with your transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Right, so I'm going to tell you exactly what these research studies are about, what I'm doing to try to help modulate or change the neural activity in the brain to induce some more repair.
Wow, this is great.
Translate the function.
Yeah, and how long are each of these segments?
Anywhere between 5 and 10 minutes, so not that long, really.
Okay, it's not that hard, but it's a great opportunity for people to learn about how, what TBI is and what's going on as far as treatment is concerned, because I think most of us don't have a clue as to what happens. I mean, as you mentioned earlier on, we were talking about, ringing our bells, and, most of us have hit our heads once or twice and maybe had a headache for a couple of days, but these long-term effects, and again, you know them, obviously, and I've known a few of them that are that way, and that, people need to understand what is going on. I just brought up the website. It's NeuroWrapped.com. That's NeuroWrapt.com, and the first one is up there.
Right.
So, and you can check that out and learn more about traumatic brain injury and what is happening to some of the people that you may know. And I think that's what's really important.
And she's really done a beautiful job helping. So while she was interviewing me and I was answering the questions, she's done a beautiful job trying to help bring home some points that I was making in lay language. So I really hand it to LG for really helping to translate these tough scientific topics about neuroscience.
I know. I'm looking forward to talking to her sometime in the future. Maybe when after this series is played, we can have you back on and talk about some of the results or maybe some of the reaction that you've gotten from people.
That'd be great, yeah. I'm sure that LG would be happy to come on more with me.
Well, we have to help promote each other. And these are the types of programs that are out there for the civilian world to understand and for the veterans world to take advantage of so that they know that they're not alone. And that's one of the main things that most veterans don't understand is that you are not alone out there, that you have, well, really about 23 million fellow veterans, and that each one of them wants to make sure that you are able to function at your highest level. And so if we can help direct you to the proper treatment or get you the benefits that you're entitled to, then we've accomplished our mission all over again.
Right. And, you know, and these research studies are open to all veterans.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be living in the Chicago area. That is one thing that I'm trying to do is to try to locate some funds to help transport veterans from around the nation who maybe are still in a vegetative or minimally conscious
okay.
state. And they can then, you know, obviously it would take a medevac flight to get them
mm-hmm.
here. But these studies are open to all veterans and all warriors. So who need my help or who need to maybe have an experimental treatment provided to them. So the idea is that, you know, I'm here to help them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to serve the veterans and warriors, and it's my privilege and honor to do that. So I think if people are wanting to know how to reach me,
I was just going to ask that question.
Yeah, great. So you could email me directly or one of my staff. It doesn't matter, but I'll give out my email. That's Teresa with an H, just like the saint. So Teresa.pape@va.gov. And then my general phone number is 708-202-4953.
4953. All right, we'll put that up on our archives. So if you go to our archives later, if you want to listen to this program again, we'll have this information there so that you can contact Dr. Pape or Dr. Scheel to find out what is going on out there with these collaborations with the military and civilian worlds. Dr. Pape, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. This was very enlightening to me, and I hope to our audience. And I wish you a very happy holiday season, and I very much look forward to talking to you in the new year.
Thank you, Dale. You're welcome. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Nina. Well, we've got another one almost in the can. A couple of things to remind everybody is that, as I mentioned earlier, it is the Christmas time of year, and everybody is looking for gifts. So we need you to go to veteransradiobookstore.com. Order up that favorite book for your veteran or for your grandson or granddaughter. Let them know what you did during the war, Daddy, and we'll see how that can work. But also, you are benefiting Veterans Radio by going through our website to Amazon and purchasing any gifts that you want to purchase on there, and a small percentage comes back to Veterans Radio and allows us to stay on the air for another 10 years, we hope. And Nina's going, 10 years, oh my goodness, that should be fun. Then you'll become the old one. And we can, Nina will never be old. I wanted to remind people that next week Bob Gould will be back. He's doing a special program on Battle of the Bulge, and we're going to have some live veterans from the Battle of the Bulge, and I believe that was 1944. Right around this time of year. And so he's going to have some live veterans right here in the studio. Don't miss it. This is a great opportunity for you to hear history from the people that made that history. And that's what we do here at Veterans Radio. So on behalf of Nina, Maria, Bob, the whole crew, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.